One sat alone beside the highway, begging. His eyes were blind, the light he could not see. He clutched his old rags and shivered in the shadows. Then Jesus came and bade his darkness flee. When Jesus comes.
It's time again for the Family Altar program with Evangelist Lester Roloff.
When Jesus comes, all the tears are dried away.
And here now is Brother Roloff.
And fills the life with glory. For all is changed when Jesus comes to stay.
In the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 21, and Satan stood up. That old bugger will make a stand, won't he? I mean, he stood up. And you notice the next word, against. Now I want to know who he's against. I've never had the devil to stand for me since I've been saved. Now he stood for me, and I stood for him when we stood together until I got saved. But when I got saved, that booger pointed his old bony finger in my face and said, I'm through with you, bud. I'm going to give you all the trouble I can. I'm going to just be on your trail. And he's kept that promise, I'll guarantee you. And so we've been against one another. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. Now, you know David is? He's the king. He's the leader. And he's a wise man. He's a good man. He's a man after God's own heart. But it seemed that he made a mistake here. Now, to me, this is almost a picture of what's going on today. And that is, what is your membership? What is your attendance? What is the percentage of the girls that come to the home that go back home and live right? And what's the percentage of your alcoholic? None of your business. You understood that, didn't you? Let me ask you this. What was the percentage back in Jesus' day? Simon Peter turned out bad. He denied him. Judas betrayed him. James and John got in a fuss with all the disciples. Oh, who's going to have the best seats? Listen, the results, as much as I may be interested in results, that's none of my business. It's my business to be faithful and to preach the truth and leave the results with him. And this rat race of counting numbers when numbers won't count. I don't mind having numbers. I'd love to have some numbers. But I want the numbers to count as well as just counting numbers. And I live by faith. You know how many girls I believe are going to get saved and come here? Every one of them. Who am I to say one little girl's so bad and wicked and sorry, I don't believe the Lord save her? I believe he'd save all of them. And I'm going to go after one of them just like he's going to save them right now. And I know this, everybody in this building can be saved before 12 o'clock today. You can be saved right now if you want to be saved. Now, if you don't, that's your business. But I just believe that the gospel. Now, when I talk to little girls, and really, I'd say this. I've never been so chilled. I've never talked to as many icy little girls. I mean hard. I mean set. I mean little girls as I've talked to. And some of them are sitting right here. I mean some of them when they came in. But I can talk with them now. But it looked like some communication lines were down or had been clipped when they came in. Now then I can talk to them. Now then they can understand. They couldn't understand my conversation. They said, I want no part of this. And yet now then it's different. Now then they're sort of human beings again. They can think, they can smile, they can sing, they can talk, they can love. And I mean, to me, that's what life's all about. Somebody's got to get us fixed because we don't come fixed. Nobody's born fixed. They're born in a bad fix. That's right. You take a dope addict, he's always wanting to get a fix. Boy, he'll betray his wife, he'll betray his children, he'll betray everybody, he'll steal, he'll do everything in the world to get something. I've never known of such a destructive generation as this one is. You take one of our boys, two or three of them ran away, and one of them nearly died. I mean, just a little bit more. I doubt if he'd have made it very much longer, and we'd have never found him. If he'd have fallen over there around 9 mile hole in the sand, nobody would have ever seen him. Nobody. He'd have been dead. And we might not have ever have seen him until the buzzards started circling. Now, that's right. Now, that's horrible, but I mean, that's the truth. I mean, he was just, and if it hadn't been for God, he'd have been lost forever down here. And he just so, and you know, Romans 8:28, and this is strange. All things, we know that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. And another little boy that ran, because he'd been sniffing gasoline, and he ran, and he came down, and he swam the intercoastal canal, and went across to a brand new cabin. And it's sort of a pleasure-loving deal down there, see? I know, because I went in his cabin, and I saw liquor and cigarettes and big bottles, quart bottles of liquor and stuff just everywhere. Why, people like that, they'd worship my boys. I mean, we run the lighthouse, they run the dark house. From dark as midnight. But I mean, that's what people go down there for. Drink, beer cans everywhere. But my boy came down, swam the intercoastal canal. He took some kind of heavy piece of lumber or something. He tore a door loose, tore the hasp off, and busted the door in. And then he, that wasn't enough. He went up and he broke the window light, and it's hard to get window lights down there. Broke the window light, and when the glass fell inside, outside, but he still, it's too much glass. He couldn't climb through there, but he wanted in. He wanted in, but he's just destructive. He just wanted to destroy something. That's all he's done all of his life. All of his life. We saved him from prison, and we've loved him and fed him, and he's brightened up, and his health has improved, and yet he went around to the back. He got the window screen off, opened the window, he climbed up that wall like a cat and walked and got in the window and went through the building and I guess picked up something to eat or whatever it might have been. And then he came out and just below there, and they caught him and picked him up. I reckon why he won't destroy everything. That's expense, but that's the price of helping boys. Listen, if I quit every time one of our girls or boys disappointed me, I'd have quit a long time before I ever got to you. Long years of disappointments, but that's not the whole story. Sweet years of victories. Trouble! Yeah, but it'll be worth it all when we redeem and get Jesus in the hearts of those little old boys. And get them right with the Lord. Some of them already been saved. So I'm simply saying the devil stood up. He's still standing up. Against who? Against the people of God. And David said to Joab, Joab was his commanding officer. He was his main helper. He said, go number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. And I will forget. You talk about Bible ignorance. Somebody's talking one day about Dan and Beersheba. And he said, well, I thought that was husband and wife. I thought they were married, you know, but these are two places. Well, Joab answered, the Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be. But my Lord the king, are they not all my Lord's servants? Why then doth my Lord require this thing? Why will he be a cause of trespass to Israel? Now, Joab had some sense. He was not only a great soldier, but he gave some good advice to the king. He said, listen, I mean, when you get through counting, that won't make any more out of them. I mean, you can get your roll and you can get your report made to the Southern Baptist Convention or the Baptist General Convention of Texas or the Methodist Annual Conference or something else. I mean, you're not going to have a lick more. I mean, you're just going to waste a bunch of time getting out and taking a census of how many you got. Well, David said, now, nevertheless, the king's word prevailed. Imagine David looked at him and said, who's king around here? Joab said, your honor, you're the king. He said, I'll do exactly what you tell. He said, all right, get at it. Get at it. Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed. Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people unto David, and all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. Did you listen to that? You know how many 1,000,000 is? That's 1,000,000. And 100,000 that drew sword. And Judah was 430,000 men that drew sword. Can you imagine? Well, that's the biggest army the world's ever known. Right there. They had some army. He wanted to count them. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. And God was displeased with this thing. Therefore, he smote Israel. I want to ask you one thing, and this is all that matters. Is God pleased with what you're doing and the way you're living? The attitude and the spirit that you have, that's all that really counts. Somebody said, well, you know, Brother Olof just got his own notion and way and convictions, and I've got to try to please. No, you don't have to please me at all. But if you ever wake up and make up your mind and you want to please me, and I'll tell you how to do it, just go ahead and please God and forget about Brother Olof. And I bound you, we'll meet down at the trail, and I'll be smiling, you'll be smiling, and everything will be lovely. Let's seek to please the Lord, not man. And that's right. And girls, I only ask you to live off of my convictions until you get some. And then they'll be your own. I only ask you to live on my faith until you get some. But there ought to be a time come in your life when you can live by your own faith and by your own convictions. The Bible said now the just shall live by faith. And if you've been saved, you could live by your own convictions. And that's the way the Lord wants it. Now verse 8, and David said unto God, I've sinned greatly. You know the outstanding characteristic about a man after God's own heart, and that's David. It's not that he never sinned. It's the brokenness after he did sin. You know, the only redeeming feature, really, and the only reason I'm standing here in this pulpit right now, I believe this, and I say this is part of my testimony. It's not because I've never sinned. I have. But I've never sinned that I know of without asking God to forgive me and help me not to be stupid and sorry enough to repeat. I mean, I try never to go to bed on unconfessed sin. Now, that means what? It means that I've got to make confession every day to the Lord. Whether it be little or large, I still must not. And so, I hope that'll give you heart and hope and courage and faith. And so, just don't ever get used to sin. If the devil ever visits you, don't ask him to spend the night. If old Satan ever knocks on your door, just don't ask him in. If you've got to talk with him, get on the porch. If the booger ever gets in, it'll be hard to get him out. Be better never to talk with him. I imagine Eve regretted the day when she sat around the graveside and buried her son named Abel. I imagine she said, oh, honey, I wish I'd have never talked with him. My, I wish he came raising a question about the Word of God. I ought never to have talked to him. This caused all, that's right. I ought never to have had a conference with the devil. And some of you little girls, you remind me of the devil himself when y'all get your little heads together and say, let's run. How could we leave and how could we make it? That's a conference with the devil. You ought to be saying, how can we stay? Oh, listen, let's hope they don't run us off instead of us running off, because this is the best place I've ever been. I've learned something, and at least I'm sober and I'm pure and I'm clean and I'm hearing from heaven every day. And so just count it a real joy. David said unto God, I've sinned. He didn't say we've sinned. He said, I've sinned because I've done this thing. But now I beseech thee, do away with the iniquity of thy servant, for I've done very foolishly. And so sure enough, the plague came, and 70,000 people died in the plague. You know why? Because David did not get God's leadership in counting the people. God did tend to count the people. And we need to be careful. A lot of times people say, well, Brother Olof, you have a large organization. How many people work for you? I don't know. It'd take time to count them up. And I could be doing something else. And so we just want to do our best for whatever God gives us. And we're not interested in making a report. And it was a great day in my life when I came to the place nobody wanted my report. So why make one? I mean, God's got it all down anyhow. And it saves a lot of time when heaven can keep my own reports. And I'll guarantee they won't make a mistake about it, because they know exactly how many got saved. I may not. We went over to islands, you know, and I'm even slow. And to announce, I didn't figure it out, but the preacher came to me and he said, now, Brother Olof, you've preached to 25,000 people this week. 25,000 people on these islands. And there's been over 400 professions of faith. Well, I didn't ever count them. I know the Lord counted them. And I tell you what, those that really were saved, I'll bind you, I'll meet them in the morning when the troubles and trials are all over. And there'll be something mighty sweet about the Lord when we get there. Amen? Oh, just to see those smiling faces when we get home to heaven. Well, something's going to happen. There's pestilence now. The Lord sent pestilence upon Israel, verse 14. And there fell of Israel 70,000 men. I wonder if that really means men, or if it means just men besides the others that fell. Do you suppose just men got killed? Or maybe does that include just, say, 70,000 men besides? That's the way he counted them a lot of times. He said he fed so many men, you remember? And he took care of so many men, but that didn't include the women and the children. And I imagine they suffered and fell and died. So there might have been 100,000 or 200,000 or 300,000 people that are dead. Now then, is David going to be hard-hearted about it? Is he going to say, well, what's that? We've got millions. I mean, who cares? After all, I'm the king. I came through all right. My family's all right. My palace is all right. Oh, no. It broke his heart. And you know what he said? He said, Lord, it's not the people's fault. I tell you, that's some great statement. He said, this is recorded twice, you know, in the Bible, in the Old Testament. He said, it's not the people's fault. It's my fault, Lord. If I'd have been the right kind of a leader, that ought to challenge every leader on the face of this earth. And we ought to be sure, if when it's our fault, we ought to confess it and say, Lord, surely it couldn't be the people's fault. How could it be the sheep's fault if the shepherd has not done right and led his people and fed his people? And I believe that much of the blame is going to have to be laid right up here in the pulpit and in the pulpits of our land if the people do not live right. Now then, David had to do something to get rid of the plague and the pestilence. You know what he had to do? Had to make a sacrifice. Somebody's got to die. There's got to be a sacrifice because he sinned, and there's got to be a sacrifice. Different now, all we'd have to do is just go to God through Christ and say, Lord, I've sinned, forgive me and cleanse me. But not so back in the Old Testament. And so it came upon Ornan, verse 20. And this is one of the greatest lessons of the Bible. And Ornan turned back and saw the angel and his four sons with him hid themselves. Now, Ornan was threshing wheat. He was busy. He wasn't sitting around the square arguing or fussing or discussing, but as David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David and went out of the threshing floor and bowed himself to David with his face to the ground. Then David said to Ornan, grant me the place of this threshing floor that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people. I want to buy your threshing place, and I've got to build an altar, and we've got to offer a sacrifice lest more people die. I'm doing it for the people. I caused the people to get in trouble. And David the king now has humbled himself, admitted his fault, confessed his sin. Now then he's asking, though, for an altar. He's heading for the altar. And Ornan said unto David, take it to thee. Now, you'll not find a greater text than this. Take it to thee, and let my lord the king do that which is good in his eyes. Lo, I give thee the oxen also for burnt offerings, and the threshing instruments for wood. Now, brother, that's a tremendous gift. He said, I'll give you the thing that I'll give you my gin, if you please. I'll give you my wheat thrasher, if you please. I'll give you this. And then I'm going to give you the wood, the instruments. I'm going to give you the instruments for wood so you can make a fire. And the wheat, I'm going to give you what I've already thrashed. I'm going to give you my wheat. I'm going to give my living to you. I'm going to give you what I've been working for out in the field and what I've been thrashing out here. And then notice, what else did he have to give? He said, I give it all. That's one of the greatest expressions and experiences in the Bible about a man's giving. How much did he give? He said, I give it all. I'll give you my threshing instruments. I'll give you my oxen. I'll give you my wheat. I'm going to give everything. I'm going to give that old ox right there. And that's the one that pulled my plow so I could make the wheat that I've made. I'll give him to you for the sacrifice. And you can kill him. And you can have him. I'm going to give you the instruments. I'm going to give you the wood. And then I'm going to give you my wheat. And then I'm going to give it all. Folks, if you ever learn to give like that, you've become a mature Christian, and you'll be the happiest person. You'd say, do you think that pleased the Lord? Evidently it did. I know another place in the New Testament where Jesus, the Bible said, stood over by the treasury. He looked in the buckets. He looked in the offering plates. He stood there. Why? He had a right to stand there. And far as I'm concerned, he's the only one that has a right to examine my giving. My giving, I wish I could say it to our radio friends, is a personal relationship between me and the Lord. And it's none of your business, and it's none of the church's business, it's none of the pastor's business, it's between me and the Lord. The amount and where I put it is exactly between me and the Lord. You'd say, don't you believe in storehouse tithing? God is my storehouse, and he tells me exactly what to give and where to put it, and that's his business, not mine. I believe it's a personal relationship. That's the reason I enjoy giving. I'm giving as unto the Lord. I don't give to the home. I don't give to the people's church. Give to the Lord. If he wants me to put it through these homes, that's wonderful. But that's his business. He owns all this. I don't own it. I don't have any of it. I wouldn't want it put in my name. No, sir. But I want it to continue on for the Lord. Girls, you'll never learn to live till you learn to give. You ought to pray every day about giving something to the cause of Christ. Now, the first thing is to give your heart and give your life. That's the first thing. Apart from that, the rest of it would be hypocrisy. 10%? I wouldn't snap my finger hardly at 10%. God owns 100% of everything that I have. And I have no right to try to satisfy God or appease him with a little peace offering of 10%. It'll make a hypocrite out of you. I need to recognize God's ownership of 100% of me and mine, my family, my grandchildren, and whatever property he may share with me for a moment. It all belongs to God, not to me. You know two or three things that does for me. In the first place, I don't have to worry about it. After all, it's his property. And let him help me look after it. And let him give me the decisions and the wisdom. And he knows the motive of my heart. He knows. And Jesus saw that little woman come by. And she placed everything she had. And Jesus made a public example out of her. And recorded it in an eternal book that'll be here a million years from right now. He didn't even give her name. I'm glad for that. When you want your name called and your pledge announced and raised, and so there's something wrong. Your giving is between you and the Lord. Personal. And he said, you know, this woman has given everything that she had, and she's a widow. And she didn't have a husband to go home to that would have a pocket full of money or a paycheck coming home from work. I mean, she was going home evidently completely out of money. And Jesus could have said, little lady, let me show you something. Come here a minute. Do you know that you can't afford to give what you've given? Why, the welfare will cut off your paycheck. My prediction, she wasn't even on welfare. But she's on heaven's fare. I've often thought this. I'd like to have gone home with her. I'd like to have hung around her little simple house for the next few days. I'd just like to watch them unload. I'd like to have met the mail carrier. I'd like to have gone to her little post office box and seen that little thing with her little bonnet on, and she started opening letters, and she said, well, I wonder who sent that. I'd like to have seen the groceries stacked on her back porch. And she said, now, isn't that just like the Lord? That's just his way of telling me. He loves me.
We're glad you joined us today for the Family Altar Program. Today's sermon entitled, Satan Making a Stand, offer number RO2670. We'd like to have today's date and also the call letters to the radio station that you're listening to. To help us cover shipping and handling, we ask for $10 for the CD. Our address is the Roloff Evangelistic Enterprises, Post Office Box 1177, Corpus Christi, Texas 78403, and to order by credit card, it's 1-800-772-7507.
needs him. For since the fall of man, on every hand, the world is lost in sin. The world needs Jesus, for only he can offer peace and joy through all eternity.
Our special offer for the month of April is Oh, to Be Like Thee, a collection of songs by various artists. Some of the songs are Jesus Means All to Me, Down the Sawdust Trail, I Want to Do Thy Will, O Lord, He Knows Just What I Need, The Fire Song, Heaven Came Down and Glory Filled My Soul, and several more. Now, when requesting this CD, asked for offer number 310, that's 310, and enclose an offering of $12. We accept credit card offers, so dial toll-free 1-800-772-7507, or you may write us at the Roloff Evangelistic Enterprises, Post Office Box 1177, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78403. Again, that offer is Oh, to Be Like Thee, and the order number is 310. Again, the address is the Roloff Evangelistic Enterprises, Post Office Box 1177, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78403. Or to use your credit card, dial toll-free 1-800-772-7507. This is Gene Price speaking for the staff, wishing you all have a good day, and we're looking forward to being with you again here on the Family Altar Program.
The strangers to God, His grace and His love, were gathered by Blue Galilee to listen with joy to words from the lips of the stranger who sat by the sea. They came and they were blessed. He gave the weary rest. He made the blinded eyes to see. He fed the hungry soul and he made the wounded whole by the waters of Blue Galilee. They sat at his feet and they looked in his face, content in his presence to be, for no one before had cared for their souls like the stranger who sat by the sea.